Current State on WKAR. I'm Joe Lindstroth, sitting in for Mark Bayshore today. Yesterday, in front of the UN General Assembly, President Obama gave a wide-ranging speech in which he sought to clarify the United States' role and intentions in the conflict-ridden Middle East. By far the most noteworthy revelation was his embrace of a diplomatic opening from Iran, America's longtime adversary.
The roadblocks may prove to be too great, but I firmly believe the diplomatic path must be tested. For while the status quo will only deepen Iran's isolation, Iran's genuine commitment to go down a different path will be good for the region and the world, and will help the Iranian people meet their extraordinary potential in commerce and culture, in science and education.
About 6 hours after Obama's speech, Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani, addressed the same General Assembly with similar notions of opening diplomatic negotiations with the United States. This follows what has been an unprecedented charm offensive, as many pundits are calling it, by him and other Iranian leaders. With us now to help sort out what this unprecedented diplomatic opening could mean is Mohammed Ayoub. He's an MSU Distinguished Professor Emeritus of International Relations and the author of the upcoming book, Will the Middle East Implode?, which comes out in February. Welcome back to Current State, Mohammed.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
First, put this into perspective for us, if you will. It seems like we haven't heard this kind of public willingness to negotiate out of Iran since the Islamic Revolution in 1979.
Well, that's not exactly true. There have been two or three cases, particularly in the last decade or 12 years, in which there have been opportunities for such openings, which unfortunately didn't get anywhere. The American administration tried a couple of times to get the Iranians to soften their line. But more importantly, and something that is not very well known in the United States, is that first in 2001 and then in 2010, there were clear signals from Tehran that they were willing to negotiate seriously on the nuclear program issue.
Now, in 2001, let's just go there. In 2001, the current Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif played a role in helping U.S. in Afghanistan. How did that work?
That's right. In 2001, at the Bonn Conference, after the overthrow of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan, there was a meeting of interested parties which decided that Hamid Karzai, who was the American favorite, would take over as the interim president of Afghanistan. The Iranians played a very constructive role. In fact, even before that meeting, during the campaign against the Taliban, the Iranians had facilitated the flow of arms and other aid from the United States to the Northern Alliance, who were also allies of Iran, and in their push to take over Kabul. So they had even made a sort of a military contribution to the campaign. But in Bonn, it was Javad Zarif, who was then deputy foreign minister and the lead negotiator for Iran, who persuaded the constituencies or those groups in Afghanistan that looked up to Iran or were associated with Iran in one way or the other to agree to accept Karzai's nomination to be president, a nomination that had been made by the United States. And in fact, James Dobbins, who was the lead American negotiator at the Bonn Conference, made it very clear. He's done it in articles. He's done it in a congressional hearing in 2007 very publicly, that had it not been for Javad Zarif, the Bonn agreement to anoint Hamid Karzai as the president would never have come about. And he gives full credit to Javad Zarif for bringing that about.
And I think it's worth noting that all of this took place prior to President Bush's infamous State of the Union address, where he called Iran part of the axis of evil.
That's right. And that really put the Iranians off, because that was about a month or so after the Bonn conference, where Iran had played, as I said, a very constructive role, that President George W. Bush lumped Iran with Iraq and North Korea as the axis of evil. And that was a signal that the Iranians took as being, you know, they'll be considered a pariah state no matter what they do. And that making up with the United States was really a dream which wasn't going to come out true.
And there was another chance that you mentioned as recently as May 2010. There was a deal brokered, a potential deal brokered by Brazil and Turkey at President Obama's behest that then he ultimately rejected. What happened
there?
That's
right. Well, Turkey and Brazil were both members of the Security Council at that time. I wouldn't say it was brokered at the behest of President Obama, but with the blessing direct or indirect of the president.
That's a little strong word.
which was an agreement for Iran to ship out much of its enriched uranium, and various other provisions were involved. And both Turkey and Brazil had taken for granted that since they had had signals from Washington that this would be acceptable to the United States, that the deal would go through. But then when the deal was actually on the table, the United States and its allies, its European allies, turned down that deal, which really put off both Brazil and Turkey. And that's why Turkey voted against further sanctions in 2010 against Iran. So that was another potential opportunity that should have been seized upon, but was not.
But was not. And here we are today. And I think it's worth discussing for a second who Hassan Rouhani is, the new Iranian president. On September 4th, he tweeted out a well-wishing to the Jewish population, especially Iranian Jews, wishing them a blessed Rosh Hashanah. That is a stark difference than his predecessor, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who was a pretty vocal Holocaust denier and declined Israel's right to exist, et cetera, et cetera. Who is Rouhani?
Well, Hassan Rouhani is very different from his predecessor, Ahmadinejad. He has always been a very moderate and diplomatic type of person. He has been involved from the very beginning with the Iranian Revolution. So he has good revolutionary credentials on the one hand. On the other, he has believed, and this came through, you know, in his career several times, that an accommodation with the West and with the United States on the nuclear enrichment issue, as well as on the overall relationship with the United States, was in Iran's long-term interest. It's interesting to note that between 2003 and 2005, when Rouhani was the lead Iranian negotiator on the nuclear issue, he had agreed to suspend enrichment. Uranium enrichment in Iran as a confidence-building measure. And he had got the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, to approve it, hoping that there would be adequate or responses from the West to his offer. But apparently what the West had on offer didn't satisfy the Iranians. And in 2005, when Ahmadinejad became the president, Rouhani was sidelined.
Just put out the pasture.
Yeah, and the nuclear enrichment process was restarted. It's also interesting that it was Javad Zarif, who we had been talking about, who's now the foreign minister, was one of Rouhani's major colleagues during those negotiations on the nuclear issue. And now, interestingly enough, Rouhani has put him in charge not only of foreign policy, but also of negotiations on the nuclear issue. And on Thursday, which is tomorrow, he'll be meeting with the foreign ministers of the P5+1, including Secretary of State John Kerry, to start that process.
I'm Joe Lindstroth, sitting in for Mark Bashore, discussing Iran with Mohammad Ayoub, Distinguished Professor Emeritus of International Relations here at MSU. I want to move very quickly. We have about 3 minutes left to talk about the myriad ways this could change the landscape in the Middle East. I mean, we could go all day with these, but I want to focus on two. Syria. Iran has been Assad's, one of his premier supporters. They're supporting Hezbollah, which has also been aiding the Assad regime. How would this impact Syria? I imagine Assad is probably a little less confident in his palace today.
I'm sure. Assad would be very nervous about any openings between the United States and Syria. So are the Israelis. So is Netanyahu. It's very clear from the statements made by the Israeli Prime Minister that he is extremely interested, in fact, committed to derailing this process. I mean, he's gone on record publicly after the correspondence, the letter from Obama to President Rouhani, and the statements that have been made by both the presidents, that he thinks Rouhani is a fake and that the Americans should not be taken in by it. On the Syrian front, I'm sure that the decision makers in Tehran look at the Syrian issue and the nuclear issue as being interconnected with each other. Now, what they are willing to offer on the nuclear issue and what they would be willing to accept in return on the Syrian issue, nobody really knows. Or the other way around, what they would offer on the Syrian issue if they had a deal on the nuclear enrichment issue as well. But, you know, this is really, as we say, the devil is in the details. And once they get down to the negotiations, this would come out. But I've always argued that the Iranian nuclear issue is not the root cause, the root cause of the problems that exist between Iran and the United States. It's the state of bad relations between the United States and Iran that drive Tehran towards seriously looking at its nuclear option.
They're a lot deeper. The mistrust, the distrust goes back a little longer than that. Yeah. Very briefly, I have less than a minute. What does each side have to do to move this forward? Right now it's rhetoric. What sort of action does each side have to take to show the other that we're operating in good faith here?
Well, Rouhani has made clear that it is not in Iran's, as he said, from the perspective of Iran's security interests to possess nuclear weapons, which is far beyond what any of the others negotiators have gone. So that's one thing on the table that should at least.
And Ayatollah Khamenei issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons.
That's right. That it's not, that it's un-Islamic and should not be a part of the Iranian arsenal. Now, that could be taken as so much talk.
Of course.
Because it is true that given Iran's strategic environment, I'm sure that they're not going to give up the nuclear option totally. But I think they could probably do enough in terms of stopping the nuclear enrichment process or things like that, which would then lead to the lifting of sanctions. But the two must take place simultaneously. I think there should be enough give on the side of the P5+1 for Iran to go any further.
Mohammad Ayoub is an MSU Distinguished Professor Emeritus of International Relations and the author of the upcoming book, Will the Middle East Implode?, which comes out February. Mohammad, we always love having you here on Current State. We will have you back to discuss this and other issues in the Middle East soon. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're most welcome. I enjoy doing this.